Welcome, everybody, to Source Material. I am your host, Jesse Starcher, and tonight we continue the celebration of the release of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, by bringing you part two of our discussion about a comic that covered the 1974 first draft of the one that started it all. The Star Wars is Dark Horse's 2013 comic book adaptation and brought us the original unpolished vision of George Lucas's script. Tonight we discuss the first two issues of this 8-issue arc, so let's go ahead and hop right into it. Now don't forget to give that Rattlitch and Broadcasting Network Facebook page a like to stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. You can find us at your convenience on blogtalkradio.com, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or iTunes. Just search Rattlitch to subscribe. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, you can do so by finding me at Stiznarkey. Also, the Source Material Twitter is at SourceMacCast. Now, you guys have delayed this long enough. We got to talk about the comic, okay? The
We're comic delaying has with good reason, sir.
Listen, 1974, first draft, the Star Wars, all right? Now, yeah. I want to go ahead. Okay, this again, these guys, I like this idea. I thought this was great for them to go back, grab the script, and they're like, okay, well, we could do something with this. We could tell a story in comic book form. Obviously, it's way cheaper to do a comic book than it would be to do any type of like film, maybe even animated film. They could just do a comic book and put that out there. Now, so like I said, this got adapted in 2013. I'll go ahead and give props to our creative team here. None of these guys have ever heard of. There may be a relation here, though. We got J.W. Rensler, who is the one that plotted the script for the comic. Art by Mike Mayhew, no relation to Peter, I would assume, which was Chewbacca, right? Peter Mayhew? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I want to make sure my joke didn't, like, completely get destroyed. And then
it kind of did, now that you have to explain it.
I want to give props to the guy who did the colors, because I really do think the colors in this book set the tone. It really did service to the art.
It's a guy beautiful. By the name,
it is.
Beautiful colors, yeah.
Guy, I maybe a girl, I don't know, maybe a computer program named Rain Barreto. But there are a lot of times where I looked at some of the panels in this book. So, okay, I can see the art there, but the colors really popped it off. So anyway, big props to them. So I told you guys why we were doing this. So let's go ahead and get into the first two issues. I'm going to try and do my best to provide a brief synopsis, and then we'll kind of, Ronnie, you're going to take the first point there. Let's go ahead and talk our characters, because I want to make sure everybody out there has a good understanding of the characters that are in this book, because folks, there are some differences. And if you're reading this book, it's kind of tough to like not impose what's already in your head from the Star Wars film onto that character, specifically the character of Anakin Skywalker, Anakin Starkiller, who is pretty much Luke Skywalker from the films, okay? That's one of the things that I had the hardest time. As a matter of fact, going through my notes, if one of you guys want to keep me in check, if you guys are paying attention enough, I put in Luke where I should have put in Anakin, and I caught myself like three or four times. I was like, shit, no, that's not who that is. So, okay, let me run down the characters here. First off, we have the Jedi Bendu, who are the good guys, all right? We all know about the Jedi using the Force, blah, blah, blah. In this story, it's the whole Jedi thing is kind of toned down. It's more like kind of like a band of really legendary people, okay? Not very much do I remember the Force being used at all by the Jedi in this book. Kind of tone down your expectations of what the Jedi are. We do have the Knights of the Sith, who are our bad guys. Our characters here, I'll go ahead and start off with Kane Starkiller, who is the father to Anakin Starkiller and Deke, I think is his name, his younger brother Deke. So Kane, I believe, was a Jedi himself. You know, that's the kind of the first grouping of characters there. Then we have General Luke Skywalker, who bears a very strong resemblance to one George Lucas, in my opinion. I don't know if you guys caught on to that, but I did.
Yeah,
I picked up on it.
General Skywalker, who's clearly older. General Luke Skywalker is a good friends with Kane Starkiller. His trusted operative, a guy by the name of Whitson. So he's a pretty prominent character here. I really don't know if I can make a parallel to the films for this Whitson guy, other than maybe Han Solo. Problem is that we have a Han Solo in this book. So Whitson may have been one of those ones that completely got axed. Well, he did, obviously, or we wouldn't be talking about him here. We do have Han Solo pop up in this book, who is, wow, he's different.
Yep.
I mean, I have Justin. Can you give us an idea of what you think Han looks like? Do you have any comparisons or anything that you can maybe put in people's mind other than big green monster?
Swamp Thing.
There you go. That's a good one. That's a good one. And he does look like a Swamp Thing.
Yeah, he does.
All right.
The face.
So our bad guys going into this, Darth Vader. Sounds like a pretty familiar name right there. However, he's pretty much just a general or something in the New Empire's army. He has no Sith relation whatsoever. There's no Jedi relation. He has nothing to do with the Force, whatever. He's just one of the higher operatives in the army. One of the main characters, that's for sure. But he's, you know, he's not special powered, and we're not going to find out much more other than that from this guy. And one of the other ones, which we'll get to here in a few minutes, is a guy by the name of Prince Valorum, who is our Knight of the Sith. So one of the evildoers in this series.
He's what you would imagine Darth Vader looking like anyway in the movies.
Yeah, yeah. He's got the mask. He looks
breathing apparatus. Yeah.
He's way younger though. He's nowhere near as old as. Who was it that portrayed him in
Peter Mayhew?
Yeah. No, that was Chewbacca.
Well, no. David Prowse.
Yes. So he looks way younger, you know.
I had Mayhew on the brain.
Now, Valorum, isn't that the Chancellor from Phantom Menace?
Yeah. Yep.
Ah, that's why I have you guys on here, because stuff like that totally went by me.
Also, very close to a character in Spaceballs, Prince Valium.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But you were talking about Whitson, right? Now, yeah. Aunt Beru's maiden name is White Son. I wonder if that's anything close to that. Aunt Beru, which is Luke's aunt.
Oh, okay.
Her maiden name is White Son.
Okay. All right. Now, see, again, I didn't pick up on too many. I know there's going to be a ton of these little Easter eggs in here for people that are fans. So you guys.
I got a lot of them.
Good, good, good.
I didn't get the Whitson one. I was like, who the hell is this? I didn't see the parallel in any of the made movies, but the other ones that I got.
All right. Well, okay. So our first two issues, we get our introduction. Okay. I'll go ahead and read the scroll here real quick, because I'm going to do that at the beginning and I'm going to do that at the end. So we got our credit scroll here at the beginning. Until the recent Great Rebellion, the Jedi Bindu were the most feared warriors in the universe. For 100,000 years, generations of Jedi perfected their art as the personal bodyguards of the Emperor. They were the chief architects of the invincible Imperial Space Force, which expanded the Empire across the galaxy, from the celestial equator to the farthest reaches of the Great Rift. Now these legendary warriors are all but extinct. One by one, they have been hunted down and destroyed as enemies of the new empire by a ferocious and sinister rival warrior sect, the Knights of the Sith. If you're picturing that, just imagine that going across the screen. Nothing like what we are familiar with today for the Star Wars, franchise. Sure.
Have you ever heard George Lucas talk about, like, what you just said there is very important. He wrote this ridiculous story, and then when he finally got Fox, I mean, if I remember correctly, he actually somehow like funded the movie himself a variety of different ways. But Fox had like agreed to distribute it, I think. You know, I believe this is an independent movie, if you can believe that. He had decided that he had written way too much. He'd written this ridiculous saga, and he couldn't do the movie that he wanted to do. So he took a portion of it. And that's what, you know, and that's what became like the original script that we saw originally. And so like this, out of the eight books that we read for this podcast tonight, he focused just on the the Death Star part of it. And obviously some things got changed around and edited, and a lot of the story had to get tossed out. That's what this was. So, I mean, so we're seeing sort of the whole picture, but what he was forced to do at the time was basically the story of their space fortress, as they call it in this thing, is...
That's no moon. That's a space fortress.
Sorry. Yeah. That's why he like just took that part of it. And funny, George Lucas has always said that, this was like this is Darth Vader's story, or whatever. He, there was not supposed to be anything after A New Hope and the Star Wars. You know, blowing up the Death Star was the end of the whole thing. So when it became a huge hit, and he'd already kind of made his conclusion, they had to figure out what the next chapter was going to be. And that's kind of how Return of the Jedi came about, because he was like, well, the whole thing was supposed to end with them blowing up the Death Star, so I guess we'll just do another one. We'll do another Death Star.
Well, it worked.
I forgot to mention Starkiller is actually a character from Force Unleashed.
Oh, really? Oh, that's right. Now, I remember that. I've never played the game, but I remember that last name. That was the main character's last name, right?
Vader's secret apprentice.
Okay. All right.
Now, we have to also remember that J.J. Abrams has completely written out most of the extended universe with a new movie.
That came directly from Lucasfilm. They said that the things that were going to be canon were basically the cartoons, the movies, none of the books, and anything related to like The Force Awakens or anything that comes out after the fact that they approve of.
Which I appreciate.
Which is kind of sad, though, for Shadows of the Empire, which takes place during Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, but then you've got stories that are coming out like Rogue One, the Han Solo movie, you know, all that stuff that's coming out. Yeah. So it's, you know, they're making up for it.
So, okay, our first two issues. We start out with Kane and his two sons, Anakin and Deke. They're attacked by what I think is a Knight of the Sith. And Kane's son is killed. They are, throughout this battle, they're able to kill the Knight of the Sith. And they decide, okay, well, we've got to head home to a planet by the name of Aquilae. All right, that's how I'm going to pronounce it. Get used to it. Aquilae is, I assume, Kane's home, where we find a very similar council, like, I don't know, kind of like what we've seen in some of the Star Wars films. Not as vast council, but there's a council on Aquilae. We also see the Emperor, who makes a case to his people. This is the Emperor of the New Empire. He makes a case to the people that they need to conquer Aquilae. Aquilae is the last independent system, which this felt like, again, if we're going to draw parallels to the movie, how about this, Mark? We're actually drawing parallels from a movie to a book instead of vice versa, which you're used to hearing on Long Road to Ruin. I got the sense of Alderaan here. That's what it kind of made me feel like, because obviously Aquilae is the home. Wasn't Alderaan the home of Princess Leia in the movies?
Yeah,
Alderaan.
Alderaan.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So that's kind of like the parallel you guys that I drew. So we get our first glimpse of Vader as he discusses how that any Jedi – Vader's discussing with somebody that potentially there's any Jedi left. It's got to be a complete myth because they were completely wiped out. At least that's his belief. But we find out that that is not the case, as on Aquilae we are treated to our introduction to the general of the army, which is General Skywalker. He's the head of the Aquilae military. We also find that Princess Leia is getting sent off to school with who's going to be missed by her little brother, I think brother and sister, the twins Biggs and Wendy.
Two twin boys.
Are they boys? Okay. So Biggs and Wendy, they're important. So remember those names. Now, Kane finally reaches Aquilae and explains to General Skywalker that the Empire has chased his family down, and he wants him to take Anakin as his Padawan. So, hey, apparently there's still the whole Jedi training thing going on here where, you know, a Jedi trainee is called a Padawan. And General Skywalker agrees, although he doesn't understand why Kane can't just teach him himself. But we find out why here in a few. Now, Whitson, as I said, Whitson, the operative for General Skywalker, finally makes an appearance. General Skywalker is told that there is a very large object coming their way. For some reason, as he runs to the station, he gets there and this thing has disappeared. General Skywalker says, "Okay, Anakin, I'm training you now. You're going to listen to me. I want you to go retrieve Princess Leia. You need to get her back here because shit's about to go down. I don't know what's going on."
Oh, shit, it's going down.
This, I might be skipping the part where Whitson finds out the Empire's coming for Aqualay. And that's what causes him to make his way back to Aqualay. And he tells General Skywalker, "Hey, get ready because the new Empire is coming here and they're going to conquer the system whether you like it or not." And at about that time, after he finds out that information from Whitson, that's when he runs to he finds out there's this huge, large object coming at them and then seemingly disappears. So General Skywalker knows something's up and he sends Anakin to go get Princess Leia, bring her back. Now, during this whole time, unfortunately, folks, we are not – they don't spare us the politics here, okay? Ugh. General Skywalker's got to get the war code. I need the war code. We're going to war with the new Empire. And, of course, the Council of Aquilae is like, "No, we can't be doing that. That's silly. You got to wait. You know, we got to wait for the
– silly talk.
We got to wait for the king." And it's like this, you know, you got to sit there and wait for the king to give an order. Well, where the hell's the king at? We still got time because the king hasn't got the order. Okay. All right. I get it. There's politics. Now, in the meantime, while they're scrambling, trying to get this war code, the space fortress Death Star attacks Aqualay. We get our first meeting of R2-D2 and C-3PO. As they're scrambling across the Death Star, they are very similar to the movies. They're trying to get the hell off the Death Star. They hop into a life pod and head down to Aqualay.
R2-D2 speaks.
Yes. That is something that took me by surprise. There's a few things that caught me by surprise in this book.
And C-3PO looks like Maria the Robot from
Spaceballs.
Metropolis.
Metropolis, yeah. Which didn't he base the C-3PO design on the robot Metropolis?
Yes, he did.
Okay, interesting. Well,
you could say that.
I'm here to learn, folks.
Can I just point out that we're all a bunch of nerds and we should get lives? The amount of detail that we know about these movies, and I'm going to throw myself right in there. I'm ashamed.
One would say.
I have a life and it's glorious.
One would say that you have waited your whole lives up to this moment to be on this podcast to talk about it. There you go.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. This is the epitome of the. No, I can't say
this
that.
Is what I've been waiting for.
I want to throw back to the Biggs name. That's Luke Skywalker's friend.
One of the pilots, right? From Biggs Darklight.
Biggs Darklighter.
Okay.
Ooh, me. There's a whole thing that they shot, I think, or was at least in the original script of they shot this because now it's been added as like deleted scenes on different Blu-rays. But when remember the very famous whining that Luke does in the movie, you're like,
"Oh yes,
but I was going to go to the Tashi station and get me some power converters."
Yeah.
"I'm with your friends, blah blah, yakety spackety. We're about to be killed by stormtroopers." So that whole bit at the Tashi station was actually shot, and they cut it for time because it didn't really add anything to the movie. But that's where you meet Biggs. What the whole purpose of that scene is that Luke and Biggs are talking, and Biggs is trying to encourage him to go become a pilot. And you know, Luke is very sad that his friend is going to leave, and he has to stay for another season. Yada yada yada. That all happens at the Tashi station, and then Biggs is gone. So later on in the movie, when he sees Biggs on on Yavin, it would be a little bit more impactful if you knew who the fuck he was. Like, you know, why is he hugging Burt Reynolds?
Yeah.
No one knew why. But that's what it was. That was a payoff to something from earlier in the movie that was then cut.
Does Biggs have any personality at all in the scene? I mean, I assume you saw it.
I mean, he's kind of like a father figure to Luke. Okay. You know, like his uncle his uncle has been, is kind of like the Dursleys from Harry Potter. They all know what happened with Anakin, and they're trying to stop Luke from going down the same way. So it's just like, Jedi, nonsense. Go pull water out of the dirt, son. Biggs is like, no, there's more to life than pulling water out of dirt, you know. That sort of thing.
So back on Aquilae, General Skywalker has sent fighters up to intercept this, you know, this huge space fortress that's coming at them. And there's a big battle that ensues. And finally, the council gets back and tells General Skywalker, look, we're surrendering. Okay. Did you not see what is coming at us right now? Did you not see how easily it took out those fighters? And so General Skywalker says, okay, fine. If that's the way it's going to be, that's the way it's going to be. So he calls the fighters back home. And as they're retreating, the space fortress lets loose and kills these fighters as they're retreating. And of course that sets General Skywalker off, and he sends him into a rage and vows that this will not stand. And that's pretty much where we leave issue two. Is there anything that you guys, first off, Ronnie Adams, what stuck out to you specifically in these two issues? I know I set you up first here.
Oh Lord. The biggest thing that stuck out to me is how big of a dumpster fire this whole thing is.
oh, come on.
I'm serious, man. Compared to what it turned out to be, it's pretty bad. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, I love everything Star Wars. I like the fact that they're coming out with the Star Wars story, you know, Rogue One. Everybody's like, oh no, it's not the original, you know, blah, 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 but whatever, who cares? I'll leave it at that. But
was there anything was there something that jumped out at you? You were like, okay, I can't stand this.
they mentioned the whole thing. We've already mentioned it, but we can expound on it a little more. The whole Starkiller family, storyline.
Okay.
That whole thing, I guess you could say, well, it comes out with Luke and Obi-Wan, you know, Obi-Wan being Luke's mentor. I just felt really unneeded to me, that whole family, and then Luke being the mighty general that he is takes on, you know, his Padawan and everything. You know, why not just follow Luke Skywalker? Because he's the one, you know, doing the heavy lifting in this story anyway, in my opinion. It was an unneeded story inside of this whole script, it was an unneeded rabbit trail, a plot device. It was an unneeded rabbit trail in the plot, in my opinion. The other thing that stuck out to me being, you know, going by the movies that we have now, comparing it to, you know, what it is now, you know, the Jedi have no powers, you know, they have nothing to set them aside. All they are is the good guys. That's it. You know, there's no reason why they have to train to be a Jedi. There's no reason why somebody has to take them on as a protege, as a Padawan. There's, you know, what are you learning? Nothing. You know, you're learning how to swing a lightsaber that everybody has. It doesn't matter who you are. You get a lightsaber. And you ride ostriches into battle.
Ostriches. Big tooth ostriches. But, I did see those.
Yeah. But it's just, it's very different. It's very bland. That's the other thing that stuck out to me. It's very, very bland of a, you know, story-wise, plot-wise, the whole thing. It doesn't catch me like the other one does. It seems like the Jedi are just goody two-shoes that I don't know. Do you get where I'm going with this? I'm struggling for words because I don't want to be down on it too much because I've described myself as a Star Wars fan. This was not a good story for me. And the whole talking R2-D2 was really, really odd to me.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's just tough to, separate. From what it was. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I feel a lot of the same way that Ronnie does. Two things I was thinking about as Ronnie was talking, and even before that, I feel like George Lucas sat down to write this thing. It was like a kid playing with toys. And it was just a meandering plot. And it was like, and then, you know, I always like refer back to like Daffy Duck trying to sell, you know, the Scarlet Pumpernickel. you know, and then the dam broke, and it's just like every just building on things. It's like if you ever hear like a little kid use their imagination and talk, they're all over the place.
Yeah,
and they can get in the weeds with minutia about this world that they've created. And it's cute when you're a little kid. It's fucking weird when you're in your 20s.
And it's almost like he did get out when he was writing this. He got out a bunch of random toys and acted it out and what he liked. He's like, oh, I'm Han Solo. But really what he has in his hand is an Incredible Hulk figure. You know, it's like, oh, I can be, you know, Han Solo, the alien that everybody relies on to get things done. And I can be, and then he has, you know, he's 20, he's in his 20s, he's weird. He has an action figure of himself. I'm Luke Skywalker. I'm the hero of everything. It's just, it's not a good storyline. And what they wrote it out to be is way, way better than what it was, what it started off as.
The other thing I would tell you, and I thought about this because, you know, we've been talking about the Harry Potter movies. You know, we talked about the Harry Potter movies in the whole month of November. And I said one of the things that I did not like about the second one was, like, I can accept it with the first movie that there's a lot of world building that has to happen. And that's fine. You're talking about a very alien place, you know, a place that's magical. And I get all of that. So you really do have to kind of set up, how does this universe work?
Right.
But once you get to the second movie, it's a lived-in universe. Get moving already. Get going. Let's see the story here. And the big problem with the Chamber of Secrets is it does more world building and not enough storytelling. It's a shit movie for that reason, in my humble opinion.
So what I was going to share there earlier, what may have got us disconnected, was there are two parts in issue two I just wanted to get your guys' opinion on. And I'm just going to run them by you and see if you guys can remember them off the top of your head, because I'm afraid of sharing the picture now. But there's a scene in issue two where Anakin has just become like General Skywalker's Padawan. And General Skywalker's like either talking to the council or something. He's like, where is Anakin at? And you see this panel of Anakin's got this girl by the shoulders, and she's like kind of looking off into the distance. And all she says is, we have nothing building up to that. As a matter of fact, the previous page, they're sitting down to dinner. And then the next page is him like having some chick up against a wall. There was no kissing. There's no panel showing any kissing. I don't know what the hell's going on there.
I just took it as Anakin was kind of a creep.
Dude, that's what I was like, why are we showing this? There's something in the script that they felt needed to be shown here, because that doesn't get touched on at all, other than the fact that, you know, immediately General Skywalker is giving him shit, like, hey, where are you at? You know, you're supposed to be in my beck and call, or you're supposed to be focused. He's like, oh yes, sir, General Skywalker, sir. Well, what the hell were you just doing a few panels earlier? And then go ahead.
He was on a planet with just his dad and his brother for a long time.
Oh no.
Well, we went there.
Justin.
He's probably like, hello.
The second.
I'm sorry. Are you trying to go like an order of the books, or can we talk about stuff out of order?
I don't care what you guys talk about. Right now, bring it up. Bring it on.
Can we talk about how George Lucas doesn't understand human emotions and is basically a robot? or is at least autistic? Because there's a scene later on, especially if you watch like the Clone Wars and focus on the quote unquote love story between Padme and Anakin. It's so evident he doesn't understand how people work. Because later on in the book, there's a bit where Princess Leia is like, I think I love you. And he's like, what is this love you speak of?
I know, dude.
Like, you ever just, I'm reading this on my Kindle, on the cloud Kindle app for Mac, and I wanted to punch my computer.
Here's how bad that was. That scene is like only, I don't know, maybe four issues removed from the other scene that I was going to talk about in issue two, where he's trying to get Princess Leia, he's like, hey, you got to come back with me. You got to come back with me. And she's like, but you got to do this and got to do that. And then Anakin just hauls off and punches her in the face.
That's the best part of the whole series.
I'm like, and then a couple issues later, she's in love with him. I'm like, there's no freaking chance in hell.
I've never had a man give me a bright cross like that. How in anybody's mind, I don't care who you are, or how old you are, or what you're writing, or if you're acting out with action figures and writing down what you like, do you think that punching a girl just right crossing her in the mouth, mm-hmm. and knocking her out cold is going to be she'll fall for him after that.
Yeah, see, that that is exactly what went through my mind. I was like, there's how. Does Lucas, I got to think, okay, take myself back to 1974. Can I try and connect the dots?
To make that make sense, you got to go back to like the Victorian era and beyond that, back to caveman era. So, you know, how did you get your wife? Punch her in the mouth.
This is bad.
Oh, well, that's psycho.
It's bad form. So
form.
Bad form, bad shame on you. Okay.
I can tell you from personal experience, generally speaking, a girl's not going to date you if you just right hook her right in the mouth. I work in a jail. I tend to not see it work. I tend to see it more getting the guy charged with domestic violence.
Yes.
If a girl comes up to me and says, what do I got to do to get your number? You got to give me a good right cross. Well, you know what? I'm good without your number, weirdo. I'll just be over here.
Look, I'm not going to say there aren't some girls out there that if you gave them like a kick to the, you know, that you gave them a kick to the vagina, you know, or punch them in the mouth,
Mark,
wouldn't be into it. But as a general rule, if you're writing fiction for a mass audience and you're like, how do I get this blonde warrior type and this princess together? People from two different worlds. How do we get it? I know. I'll have the warrior puncher. Yeah.
Oh, Lord. He's so forceful. He knocked out three of my teeth on our first meeting.
Man.
What a man.
That's called domestic violence.
It was probably, honestly, it was probably the most impactful moment in this book, in this series, that I was like, what the hell?
Ass off when I started it. I'm not enjoying it.
It's so bad.
It got better towards the end. It got less on my nerves. But I mean, I wouldn't go as far as saying, oh, I really enjoyed this or anything. But I have to say, the best part of the book for me was when he just was like, you
straight up push.
Because the whole thing was, it was like, I don't know if Mel Brooks knew he was making fun of George Lucas's original screenplay when he wrote Spaceballs. But now I'm seeing
yes. Yes.
But like, it's Her Royal Highness's Max luggage. Well, she wouldn't leave without it. And it's like, okay, that's funny. It's funnier to me.
Because yeah,
it's
like absolutely.
Fun of that.
Yep.
Falcon punch.
Yeah, you just falcon punched that poor girl in the mouth, and now she's like, but I love him. No, that's not how any of this works.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, there's the first two issues of The Star Wars, and I want to thank you for joining us and hope you can come back tomorrow and catch the next part of our podcast. So until then, folks, have a good one.